get more coffee real quick.
Oh, sure.
Sorry.
I could. Is there enough maybe for two?
I wouldn't mind it.
Oh, no. Sorry, Jenga.
I can
run to the store if that's...
No, you can make coffee. I was going to drink some cold brew.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, there's mold in the... I forgot there's a mold in the...
No, bathroom. I cleaned it out, but I don't know if we have any paper filters.
No, sir.
All right, never mind that. No, it's not a huge deal.
Ew, mold?
Ugh. Not a fan? You're not a fan, Virgil? What?
I don't make
in the coffee?
Coffee anymore, so I don't even know, when the last time that thing was clean.
Yeah, no, I opened it up, and it was just white shit all over.
It's probably, like, the last time you lived here.
Yeah.
I didn't use the... I don't make
That's almost
coffee.
Certainly what happened.
I remember dumping it out, like, the day that I moved, but it's also possible that I didn't.
Normal I should have checked, but I was just like,
This is all going in.
Yeah, please leave it in.
So everyone can hear how normal I am.
This is the cold.
Are you jealous of a guy with a regular life that doesn't have a bunch of OCD tics about washing things out or flushing his toilet before he leaves the house?
Oh God, Felix, please flush your toilet. We cannot have meetings there. And please get liquid hand soap.
No.
For guests! Get a hand towel for guests to use.
Yeah, like,
when you use his bathroom, there's a bar. The only thing you have is a bar of soap that's covered in Felix's facial hair. I don't know why.
It's not your face, it's not his facial hair.
Oh, God, and that's the only opportunity to wash your hands in Felix's apartment.
Look, it's only fucked up because I didn't think anyone was coming there.
That's not an excuse.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's not filth. It's just disorganized. It's not filth.
No.
It's not.
It's crossed the line.
No, it's not fucking. You have
like papers is like disorganized. And shit.
You fucking saw it. It's not filth.
I was there last night.
Okay, well, last night it kind of was, but Matt slept there. Matt was fine with it.
I didn't know that. I slept at my place.
Matt literally confided in me that he was miserable.
Right. This is getting mean. This is gross now.
No, it's an intervention.
It is an intervention. Okay, but your place has like a cat.
I only know how to love with criticism, Brendan. Don't criticize me.
Virgil, by the way, when we were in our fucking meeting with our publisher the other day, Virgil just couldn't help but press the button on the conference phone.
That was awesome.
The middle of the room.
It was because I looked at it and I'm like, why can't he stop touching? I'm like, oh my God, it's the exact same shape as a fidget spinner.
It's a giant fidget spinner.
Yeah.
You got the fidget spinner and now the problems are all solved.
Yeah. Now it never, yeah.
Well, maybe.
Yeah. He was on time today, actually.
Maybe if I get the spinner, I'll be able to just do a very slight cleaning like I need in the apartment.
Felix, just know yourself. Know your limitations.
We go to Felix's apartment. It's still filthy, but there are fidget spinners everywhere. Spinning in this ominous way when you walk in. They're all spinning simultaneously. He's got them to go infinitely.
Yeah, then I would finish the book by myself if I have the right conditions of filth and a toy.
Hello, friends. It's your Chapo for this week. We got a full deck, except for Matt, who's traveling right now. But rest assured, he has co-signed everything that we're about to say on this episode. And this episode, it's another movie episode, folks. Just a couple weeks ago when we did our Jesmas Cheers to the Boy episode, we mentioned that it was sort of a sequel, a spiritual pairing with our We Live in the Zone Now post-election episode. And now I'm pleased to bring you this episode, which is indeed a sequel of sorts to the Lady Ghostbusters episode, who fans of the show will remember that deep cut. And
that
super
was my first episode.
Yes.
Yeah, it was Amber's first show.
Which Felix has commemorated very solemnly with a lovely bird.
It's like my 21-gun salute.
It's also a sequel, a literal sequel to our Batman vs. Superman Suicide Squad.
That's right.
That's true.
That's right.
In many ways, it's all the threads are coming together here. Mm. The incredibly labored and leadened DC Comics universe and the phenomenon of blockbuster feminism coming together in one movie
That movie, of course, I'm talking about Wonder Woman, people. We all went to go see Wonder Woman this
week. I'm going to slam the Middle Eastern guitar theme that they always play, which is pretty good, I have to say.
I feel like I didn't even see anything because in my day-to-day life, every woman is wonderful.
Ooh, yeah.
I took my girlfriend to see the movie, and I made sure to tell her, I thought Robin Wright Penn was the sexiest woman in that motion picture.
Yeah. Your bitch did look good, though.
Yeah, she looked great.
Show me the lie.
Popping delts.
Yeah.
So I say this is this is a sequel because I think we've done like several of these awful DC comic movies. We did Suicide Squad. We did Batman versus Superman. And this is indeed a sequel to that. But this is also the sequel to Lady Ghostbusters in that we see a similar sort of marketing apparatus and ideology cropping up around these Hollywood blockbusters where now, you know, girls get to have fun and they get to be represented on films in remakes of 80s comedies and now DC superhero movies. This is the movie that shows that representation is important. And when you see it with your daughter, your wife, your girlfriend, your wife's boyfriend, you will cry when you leave the theater because you will know now that this is like what women feel, what I've always been feeling every time I go to see a movie.
Yep.
Okay, but before we actually get into the meat of the movie, I think we should really discuss the experience, which I think actually started when Brendan sent a text to the WhatsApp that literally said, this movie is going to be 2.5 hours long.
Yeah. 2 hours and 21 minutes.
I was sitting outside on the bench outside the Alamo chain smoking because, like anyone who's about to be tortured by Israel, you know, I was saying I have to stand strong in my beliefs, my commitment to my state. You know, I consider us kind of like Palestine.
Yeah.
But I was like, the man's inhumanity to man is just breaking me down. And you know, we persisted. We persisted. We did it. Yeah. I'm very proud of all of you.
We made it through the whole thing.
Me, Amber, Nick, and Nick's girlfriend were in a car going to the movie theater, and then we get the text message that the movie's 2.5 hours long. And I guess, like, I had blotted out of my head how long. Like, Batman versus Superman was also, like, almost 3 hours long.
Yeah.
It felt that fucking long. It's so, like, I totally forgot now that these movies have to be over 2 hours long. They can't just
like that
get in and out in 90
minutes.
Well,
they're not just about comic books. They're about life and death.
They're about
war.
They're about mythos and heroism and man and God.
Yes. Nothing to respect from this mythos.
Yeah, I mean, like, I love how when they made Watchmen, which is like a really...
My cat is chewing on the plant.
Oh, Ernest.
Remove him.
Okay, hold on.
Yeah, just pick his fat ass up, put him in the hallway. He'll forget what he was doing.
You got to go back.
Ernest, play with your cat fidget spinner.
Yeah, play. Start gaming.
There we go.
All right,
play your Overwatch, Ernest.
On the Chapo movie series, as Ember has said, the movie theater experience, describing the movie theater experience is part of the fun. However, in this instance, describing the movie theater experience also ties into the weird politics of this movie, because we did all go see it at the Alamo Draft House in downtown Brooklyn, which is where they hosted the all girls screening of this movie, right? That was part of its big, you know, girl power, you know, empowerment marketing push, which immediately became part of this idiotic, you know, tug of war, culture war over this god awful movie. And was it like, who is that? Like, it was that Red State guy who like said he was going to buy a ticket.
Stephen Miller.
Yeah, the guy who looks like a Doberman Pinscher.
Red Stees.
Yeah.
Red State.
Red Stees.
Okay. He was the guy. He's the guy with like a really like large head and idiotic hair who decided to make this like his, you know, hill to die on, that he was going to buy a ticket for the all women screening of the movie and show up. I don't know what happened with that. Did they let him in?
I kept him out. I was protecting that screening. I said, ladies, if you want to have a supportive, like, you know, women's room at a bar type experience, like, take your shoes off. I can hold your shoes.
But like similar,
I bounced him. I went back to my old profession.
But similar to how, like, remember a big part of the marketing campaign for Lady Ghostbusters was that like misogynist trolls don't want you to see this movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Like they were clearly aiming for that again with this movie, and like the you know, Red Stud or whoever the fuck he is. I think, was fully aware of what an idiotic marketing gimmick he was, and he was like, well, my whole career is idiotic marketing gimmicks. I'll happily glom onto this. I'll play the heel role for that. But then, like, the interesting thing that happened with this movie that I've noticed is that after it came out and indeed was a big hit, unlike Lady Ghostbusters, like, the sort of push, they had to, the right had to adopt it for their own, and they had to sort of be like, actually, Wonder Woman is good. It's our movie. Feminists are mad at it.
And to be fair, as we'll get to, the film does contain a lot of themes and ideology that is quite compatible with their approach toward...
Yeah, they're right to like it.
Yes.
But, movie theater itself. This is my first time ever going to the Alamo Draft House in downtown Brooklyn, and I found it to be somewhat of an enervating experience overall.
You know, Amber, they have a card system too, so you can snitch on people.
Yeah,
you just hold up a card
and be like, "This person is talking."
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
That's, I mean, that's just like the UCBification of theaters.
Yeah. Well, God forbid someone talk during Wonder Woman.
If it's the sorrow and the pity, I can see wanting to kick someone out for laughter. But this
honestly,
type of film,
there are funny scenes in every movie.
That's
though.
True. I that was the wrong movie to be.
Remember when the guy gets pushed out of the window and the pianist?
Yeah,
kind of like a slapstick moment.
Yeah, it was very Buster
tragic.
Keaton. Yeah,
I mean, like the point is like this is not. An art, but like the thing is, like, this is not an art house cinema.
Yeah,
you're not going to see like an Ernst Lubitsch film there. You're going to see fucking Wonder Woman.
You go to a movie theater in Brooklyn, it's loud.
Oh, yeah.
And it's fun, and it makes the movie better.
Yeah.
And this is clearly trying to create, let's say, a certain kind of movie theater patronage.
A certain kind of demographic representation in the audience. So this is like the equivalent of, like, if you see a bar that has a big sign out front that says, absolutely no baggy jeans, backwards baseball hats, do-rags, 6XL white tees.
Yeah.
Present your certificate from one of your 7 unpaid internships, Andrew.
I do want to note that going to see a movie in Brooklyn is not loud or fun or a good experience.
Yeah. No, it's not. You have a better time at random warehouses discovering new bands.
Oh, also, on the experience tip, the day before, we had purchased Virgil his first fidget spinner.
Oh, that was so... Oh,
and
my God.
Funnier than almost anything in the movie, and it was a pretty funny movie for bad reasons. The funniest part was Virgil getting there late and walking straight up to us with the spinner going as he was going, hi, can I sit down?
To be honest, he might not have lasted...
Yeah, I think you needed that.
Well, I was
seriously.
Something in a lot of Glazer did not say. I cannot say.
Like, we were waiting for it because it's like assigned seating, and like we were waiting for him, and I just see him like come down the stairs, like just jet across the aisle, just gliding through fidget like spinner going riding spinners, and it's just gliding through, like he's just floating across the aisle, and he just goes, this is helping my fucking brain right now.
No, it does. It makes you feel normal.
And then there was the menu. They had, like, I ordered hot wings. I think 3 of us ordered hot wings.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, we really could have shared the hot wings.
But you saw all this fancy shit.
And then I ordered hot wings and queso dip with nachos. It was all clearly, like, pre-prepared shit. But, like, I also ordered for the drink a Pimm's cup. As a part of my new fusion cuisine of British Raj and Super Bowl party. It's a disgusting combination, but I was so high that I'm like, yeah, I'm a Florida Gators jersey on top and Jodhpurs on bottom. But there was shit on the menu, like the Southwestern Tofu Quinoa Bowl. somebody's saying, like, do you know where to get good vegan food in Brooklyn? Let me tell you about the Alamo Draft House.
Okay, it's a movie theater. It probably shouldn't have, like, a 4-page menu book.
Yeah.
You know?
And the pub grub itself wasn't that good.
No.
The food was not very good.
Those were some weak-ass wings.
The cookie was very good, and I liked the queso dip.
I'm not sure how I feel about this whole, like, new phenomenon where you get served food in a movie theater, because it's like...
I already bring food to a movie theater.
It's fine if the food's good.
It's like,
I put a jamon serrano in my gym bag.
No, but like regular nachos at a movie theater,
that's
totally normal.
That's fine, but like you get it like at the concession stand, like, and here they had these like Igor like people like shuffling in and out. Your Reese's Pieces.
I'm not going to eat a Cobb salad while I'm watching a fucking movie. stone.
I love just sipping my lobster bisque while during one of the 3-hour laser battles that are now part of every superhero movie.
Yeah.
The Pimp's Cup was good but weak, and also they took way too long in between serving. It was terrible. Yeah. We were not drunk enough.
No.
Well, Virgil, you ordered 2 drinks at a time, which I thought was a smart
move. Yeah, I should have done that.
Galaxy brain.
So once again, Virgil winning.
Yep.
In all
spinning
aspects
and
of
winning.
Spinning and winning.
Spinning. My brain power is increased by 50%. I am now smarter than Marilyn Vos Savant.
Yeah, no, you guys with your non-spinning minds were like, duh, when's my drink coming? But Virgil like instantly did calculations.
He saw the ones and zeros. Yeah.
He saw through the matrix of getting drunk in the movie theater.
That's our evaluation of Alamo Drafthouse. The food is bad and it's covertly racist.
We're Yelpers now, actually. Yeah. That was our review of Alamo Drafthouse and Fidget Spinners.
Yeah.
One negative, one positive.
Yeah.
But to the film itself, we're here to discuss Wonder Woman and how wondrous she is. Mm. This movie is currently at 93% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Well, oh my god!
When we had this idea to do this movie, because we had already done Batman vs Superman and Suicide Squad. Going into this, I was like, what if this sucks? Like, what if it's like actually kind of good and we won't have anything to talk about? Within the first 10 minutes, I was like, this is unwatchable. This is
Will,
awful.
Was it 93% from the critics or from the audience? Sometimes there's a big gulf there.
All right, let me check.
I remember.
I'm not going to misinform.
All I know
critics.
Is that every like one of my girlfriends or like my you know Hillary cubicle mate said she cried.
Okay, no, this is the top critics are at 92%. The audience score is at 91%.
No,
this is a collective delusion, and I'm sorry.
Yeah.
This movie was bad. This movie was bad. It was a bad movie.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just because it was ideologically repellent. And it was. It was like war hawk feminism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was a bad movie.
Even before the 10 minutes of watching it, hearing that it was 2.5 hours, it's like, this has got to be bad. Like, there's no way it's going to be good.
How can these movies be 2.5 hours? Like, I was saying that, like, Watchmen, which is a smart comic book that Zack Snyder fucked up because he identified with the wrong character. it's like, it's not that long and overwrought, and they fuck that up. But when they get a comic book that's like, what if there was, like, a really strong woman and she had an invisible plane? They're like... There's a lot of themes we can explore here. What?
Yeah. So,
oh, fuck.
I wanna dive into this film, but before we do, I would like to. Now we're gonna hear from our official Chapo film correspondent and Australia correspondent, Matt V. Brady. He also went to see this film, and he has shared us his review. I assume he also enjoyed it. Let's take a listen.
Greetings, Chapo Trapo Howzo. It's international film correspondent Matt V. Brady here reporting in with my review of the film Wonder Woman, or Wonder Sheila, as it was called in Australia. Wonder Sheila is directed by Patty Jenkins, who also directed the film Monster, which apparently is a movie about my ex-wife. Just kidding. Wonder Woman actually taught me that jokes like that are wrong because of feminism. Now, it's a movie that's set during some sort of prequel to World War II. It's about an Ireland outpost of the IDF and one young soldier's quest to show that she's just as good at war as any stupid man. It's a movie that taught me all about feminism, that women are actually good, and I really have nothing more to say apart from the fact that I hope the rest of this episode is just Amber talking while the boys listen in respectful silence. In conclusion, give your money to Wonder Woman.
Totally agree.
Navi Brady.
Inimitable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, my name is gross anyway, but to hear it with an Australian accent, Amber.
Amber's a bad accent.
It's a bad accent, folks.
And we're all feminists now because of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because of Gal Gadot. So, the movie itself. It opens in the present day, and Wonder Woman, Diana Prince, is working as... she's taken over from Tom Hanks at the Louvre, discovering secret art conspiracies in history. She's like some sort of curator at the Louvre of ancient weapons and artifacts and things like that. And Bruce Wayne, Ben Affleck, sends her a photograph of herself, of like an old grainy photograph, and he's like, I hope one day you can tell me your story. And she like looks wryly at it, and she's like, I'll tell you my story now, audience. And then it flashes back to like her as a child growing up on this like mythical island of warrior Amazon women. Yes. It's like a sort of you know Eden like Mediterranean paradise.
Eden, Lesbos.
Yeah. It's the island of Lesbos.
Yeah, and they had to create this homeland through a very courageous act. They blew up the King David Hotel.
They also apparently couldn't figure out a way to work on Gal Gadot's accent. So they had everyone else try to sort of approximate an Israeli accent, but it didn't really turn out. So I've just in my head constructed it as a lesbian accent.
It was like an island of like strong women who were also Count Chocula's daughters.
And like, you know, Diana's mother, who's like the queen of the island, like tells her the story of how the island came to be.
Oh, God, and she was like 20-minute. She was like,
well, there were some Phoenicians here, but we, you know, they chose to leave. They chose to leave.
Yeah,
you know,
it's Phoenician.
Phoenicia
they have
is
a
not
history.
A real place.
Yeah. Yeah. They have no language.
Their
they
leaders
have no culture.
Told them to leave.
They, you know. So
they like white phosphorus.
So, like, the important thing is that it's ours now, and it's ladies only. Okay,
Hell yeah.
It's ladies' night forever on this island, and we see, you know, young Diana Prince, who's like, you know, the princess of this island, and she's a strong, willful girl who on an island where every woman is trained from birth to be a warrior. She wants nothing more than to be trained to be a warrior. Yeah. But for some reason, her mom won't let her do that. So like, there's like,
she's the only child on the island.
Oh,
too.
Right. So there's some sort of parthenogenic reproduction
they make,
on this
they make
island
her
too.
Out of clay.
Yeah,
so that was the argument that she was made out of clay. Yeah.
That's the story that her mom tells her. Like the story.
Yeah. However,
she really got knocked up by Zeus.
Yeah,
because you know that's embarrassing.
Spoiler.
And there was this long, ugly discussion of the mythological backstory, and it was Zeus was king of the gods, and Ares challenged him, and it's all.
It was Christianity.
It was all dumbed down for audiences, and it was not canonical.
This
is when I clocked out of the movie 5 minutes in, because I spent most of the rest of the time thinking, you know what? The first arguments about canon almost certainly took place during the ancient Greek city-states, where each individual city-state has their own temples, and they have their own individual patron god that's loosely linked up with the broader mythology of the area. But different priests are going to preach different things. So if you're an itinerant in some way, maybe a merchant or an itinerant priest, you might go from Athens to Corinth, and Corinth would say, actually, Athena is daughter of Zeus and sprang out of Zeus's head. You know what? Athens, we learned a different way.
Well, the Spartans, there was a big problem. Originally, they had problems with Athens because Athens did an all-female reimagining of the Pantheon, and the Spartan bros harassed them.
So whenever you edit Wikipedia or argue about canon on the internet, know that you're part of a rich tradition in Western civilization.
Fair enough.
Okay, can I leave now?
That's all I have to say. That segment reminded me a lot of another movie we've savaged in the past, The 300, where the graphics were PlayStation cutscene bullshit.
Yeah.
Here's a few observations I had. First of, Gal Gadot as an actress. Not good.
Oh my God!
Her line delivery in that movie was like Arnold and Conan, but not charming or endearing in any way. Just everything she said, I was just hearing him being like, "You got to get down! No, these people are dying."
It was very get in the chopper, but like sexy and breathy.
This is, you know, we're going to get into a larger discussion about this when we get into the moral crux of the movie. You know what her syntax sounds like? Bana Alabad. Think about it.
She starts training.
Yeah.
There's got to be like, queen doesn't want her mother, the queen, who's that played by?
Connie Nielsen.
She's playing that in
one of
every
many really good actors that show up on the periphery of this movie.
Yeah, but I feel like she's always in that role now of just like queen of some ancient society. That's where she always comes in Gladiator and then in those.
Nice work if you can get it.
Yeah, I guess so. But she doesn't want Gal Gadot to be a warrior, which we find out later is because she's special. And then the Robin Wright Penn.
Oh, no, Robin Wright, sorry.
Yeah,
no
she
disrespect.
Got on Proud of you, girl.
Yeah.
She, however, sees a pupil in her midst and wants to train her to be the ultimate warrior.
And like this
yeah,
whole
and the training segments always end with Robin Wright being like, all your failures are just you not believing in yourself. You are stronger than you know. And it's like, this is when people talk about millennials having issues with narcissism, maybe it has something to do with that kind of you know, feel good progressivism that's like, you just have to believe in yourself, you can do anything. No, that's
it's individualism.
It's bourgeois individualism. Yeah. But everything, it fit in extremely well with like empowerment style feminism, where it's just like, the only reason you would ever fail at anything is because you don't know how awesome you are.
I mean, almost every line in this would that showcase to be one of those lines.
The script was written from basic bitch Instagram memes.
It was like, yeah, it was like one step above the Instagram things that are like, all the fake people are the ones who are worried about what you can do, not what you can't.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, if I'm obviously like this movie, I'm going to train my kid how to fight. But like sometimes you get a dud and it's all right. Like you can raise a kid. When your kid can't fight, that's when you put them into STEM or something. And that's all right. I'm going to know it's because they don't have my superior genetics.
Your children are all going to be like ballet en main danseurs. They're going to be like prancing.
I do not know what you
French.
Said. I do not know what you said, so I'm going to assume it's an anti-Semitic slur. And yes, they probably are, despite the preference of bride that I have. We know what I'm going to end up with, but okay, fine. You don't have to say it.
They're gonna be theater kids. They're going to wear black.
So
all my kids are going to look like the Sprocket skit.
Yes, exactly.
I'll love them just the same, even though that they won't be able to do a double leg or to come up with a quick sexist punchline. I'll still love my fucking terrible Wesleyan kids.
Aww. Okay, the plot of this movie begins in earnest when Chris Pine like crash lands by accident on this, you know, on this Mediterranean island in his like Red Baron style World War One plane. That's like this movie takes place during World War One, as Matt Brady said, the prequel to World War Two. And just a note about that, which is weird. I'm convinced that probably 2/3 to 3/4 of everyone who went to see this movie just thought she was fighting Nazis.
Yeah. Mm.
Like, I'm almost positive that they all, like, most of the people who saw this movie thought it was just World War II. Mm-hmm. And, why didn't they just make it World War II? Oh, yeah,
because if it was World War II, then they would have to look at the terror weapon would have to be the nuclear bomb, which we dropped.
I mean, like, the thing about that was like,
it couldn't be gas,
right? The thing about that was like, who's seeing this movie and is like, oh yeah, I hate those guys, Germany in World War One. I hate the Kaiser so much. Yeah. I love Weimar. I hate the Kaiser.
Also, because
Treaty of Versailles, go.
For the plot of this fucking movie, so the extent that there was one, World War One didn't have a cataclysmic ending.
Yeah. Right, and it didn't have, there was no good side in World War One. It was literally just like an army of colonialist pedophiles versus like a bunch of guys who went into Africa and forced like whatever German properties they had there to shit in their mouths. Yeah. Like, no one was good in that war. Yeah. Everyone was a fucking monster.
No, like they used the classic American, like the way World War II can be safely transcribed into almost any film because it's the one war that we all agree was good and had
There's a clear black cowboy bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, whereas World War One, they fucking like just, you know, solder on the exact same like moral calculus to a completely different thing, which is actually abominable because like in this movie, not only do they make Germany the bad guys, they make the British Empire the good guys.
Yeah.
And what's worse than that, they explicitly make the person trying to get an armistice done the bad guy of the whole movie.
Stop it. No.
What?
Armistice.
What did he? Armistice?
Oh, fuck.
I stand with you.
No,
Will.
We're keeping this.
Oh,
no. Because this is what I have to deal with.
So, okay. Chris Pine crash lands on her Mediterranean island as like the first man she's ever seen, and there's lots of cute jokes about that you know, I guess some morons liked
Pilot Dan Quinn.
And, you know, and then he's being tailed by the German Navy, and then they wash up on shore, and there's, like, a battle where they, like, you know, women on horseback and bow and arrows fight, like, you know, guys with pointy helmets.
Yeah. Shoot arrows at
them. They shoot arrows at them, and it's, like, you know, that's, like, the female empowerment battle scene.
Yeah. And that kicks – and then so Robin Wright dies, and that kicks off – the realization within the Isle of Lesbos that there's some broader war going on. They interrogate Chris Pine character and realize that there's a world war, and that the villain of their mythology, Ares, according to Wonder Woman, although it seems like the elders don't really believe the story, Ares is making men do war. So she needs to go out and find Ares, and once she kills Ares, whatever the fuck that means, there won't be any more war, and that's her mission. Mm-hmm. She, and there was this bit in the mythology, the horrible 300 video game cutscene part where they keep talking about the God Killer, and she thinks that the God Killer is her sword. They say the word God Killer.
It's her pussy.
It's right. they say God Killer about 67 times in the course of 2 minutes.
I never knew what that meant.
And
right.
You're supposed to just really remember that it's her sword, but then later that's subverted.
Oh, the God Killer.
It's her
you
pussy.
Mean logic?
Right. That's what the Greeks, yeah. You know, that's what they thought.
Yeah.
So then she sneaks out.
Actually, the only other man on this island was Sargon of Akkad.
Yeah. The Germans are so triggered that they're invading our island.
Yeah. So she and Chris Pine sneak out. Her queen realizes she can't stop her from doing what she wants because she's a damn feminist who needs to get out there and fight the bad guys no matter the cost.
In this case, in a completely pointless colonial imperial bloodletting
that
slaughtered millions for essentially no reason.
I have to go out there and risk my life so England can have Gibraltar.
Well, that's an interesting thing. Is that so? Because they turn Ares into the. And at first, it's kind of suggested throughout the movie that the whole Ares thing is a silly delusion of Wonder Woman, and she just still believes the stories as a child. Because it is a simplistic, dumbass way of looking at the moral universe that there's just one figure that makes war happen, and that if you kill him, everything's okay, which actually justifies going into war so that you can kill the one bad guy. But then by the end of the movie, and we won't skip ahead too much, but she's absolutely right, and there is just one big bad god, and she does kill him.
And like, it starts out though, like they're like the German bad guy played by Danny Houston.
Very well, by the way. Yeah. I like Danny Houston.
Good job. Danny Houston, again, another great actor.
Everyone in
Connie Nielsen and a few other people, David Thewlis, who we'll get to in a second. Yeah. He's based on a real German admiral or something like that, who is in charge of their gas program, and he's developing a German super gas with the help of his female chemist friend,
Dr. Poison.
Poison.
Instead of writing like a complicated plot for this thing, they just kind of put different Deus ex machinas in like they were fighting.
Yeah,
like it's just like God Killer versus like super gas or something, which again, this is why they couldn't like set it later and look at an actual gigantic terrible weapon, because the obvious answer is one that Americans dropped on Japan.
Right. Yeah, the villain by Danny Houston is a German guy on poppers basically throughout the movie. He keeps taking this little capsule that makes him super strong, which is just like only pays off narratively.
It's kind of a reference to Nazi speed, but they're not Nazis yet.
They're not Nazis, so it just serves the story at one moment at the very end, right before he dies, where he's able to punch her, so it's not a complete knockout, but that's like the only reason.
It was a metaphor for all Germans, and the base that they operated at was actually a bathhouse / disco.
Yeah.
But it was really funny, like he's the female villain is this like evil chemist who creates like super mustard gas, and we know she's also evil because she's disfigured.
Yes.
Yeah. And, that's how you know when a woman is bad, when she's ugly.
Yep.
I mean, they do that with male characters in movies too.
Yeah, you know? She was Phantom of the Opera. She had the whole Phantom of the Opera
facial
look going.
Prosthetic. Yeah. Yeah, and then she's like at one point in the movie to Danny Houston, she's like, "I was up all night. I made you a new kind of poison."
Yeah.
And he literally cracks a glass capsule under his nose and just goes, "Mommy, baby wants the fuck." That wasn't in the movie.
He literally says that.
It was implied. It was strongly implied that his asshole was fully dilated as soon as his eyes rolled back in his head. And he was like, "I have the power of a god and the asshole of the Holland Tunnel right now."
That's like, I mean, I thought it was good because it showed like the worst thing a German German can be, which is like a militaristic psycho, but also the future of Germany, which is to all be like big fat party boys who like just make generic techno songs where they're like, bring on the funk, bring on the funk, and just fuck each other all day. And it's like, well, you know,
at
it's
their
like,
best,
I'm like,
at their worst, they're Nazis. At their best, they're Kraftwerk.
Exactly. And it's like, I'm like one of those pit bull owners, but with German people. And I'm like, I'm like, yes, you know what? They've done some bad things, but they raised them wrong by imposing austerity on them.
No bad Germans, yeah. It's just bad owners.
Yeah. You know what? I actually completely agree with that metaphor, Felix.
Yeah. Yeah, if you are kind to them and don't impose austerity on them, they're just all like big, fat party guys.
They're Kim.com.
Like, yeah, they're Kim.com.
Yeah.
They're on vacation all the fucking time, even though they're all engineers who work 80 hours a week. They make songs called, like, you know, the funk beat. And just like, wear their t-shirts in the hot tub with a bunch of hot women, yeah, who have like sort of robotic smiles. They're great. I yeah. fucking.
But if you chain them to a tree out back and beat them with a lead pipe, you're gonna get Nazis.
And the heroes of this movie are directly responsible for imposing the terms of the Treaty of Versailles on Germany. Keep that in mind as well.
Yeah.
So, Diana.
Yeah, that was the other thing. It was just like, you know, at the end of this, there's a whole other world war.
Yeah.
She didn't really. Well,
a worse one.
Well, because there's this line where she's like, if I can just get to the German people and kill Ares, their hearts will be free and they will love everybody again. And Will's just like, give it a generation. Yeah.
She tried to introduce techno to them in 1930.
They didn't have the technology.
Yeah. So like, they weren't ready.
So Diana and Chris Pine, her, like, you know, meet cute boyfriend or whatever, they leave the island together. He's an American spy who's been assigned to the, like, you know, British Secret Service or OSS or whatever. There wasn't an OSS yet, but whatever. You know what? But so like, they take a sailboat back to London in about a day, and then they're back there. And then there's this whole, like, My Fair Lady fish out of water thing where she's in modern society and, like, has to dress like a proper woman, even though she's, like, but how do your women fight in battle if they don't have a shield and sword on them?
Lucy
all the
Davis,
time?
God bless her. She has to play this, you know, annoying sort of like secretary character. I like Lucy Davis, but it was an annoying.
Well, like I said, like all the peripheral actors in this movie are all very good.
Like
delivering ridiculous dialogue. Yeah.
They end up Wonder Woman. The outfit they settle on is "Lord, give me the confidence of a mediocre white man" T-shirt.
So she's strutting about, you know. Early 20th century London, and like Chris Pine's whole thing is like he's aware of like the secret Nazi wink wink gas program, and he's just trying to be like, you know, the war is almost, this isn't like January 1918, I guess, like the war is almost over, like Germany is pretty much ready to throw in the towel, but like, except this one mad general is like, now with my poppers and this new poison gas.
And you think that he's going to be Ares, but I think Amber and I, when there's the scene after the My Fair Lady bit, Wonder Woman goes with Chris Pine into the parliament or whatever, and there's this, played by David Thewlis, there's the equally doddering and weak Neville Chamberlain-ass prime minister. And he's going, I wonder if we, you know, could impose the armistice.
Have we considered peace? And we both, and by this time I had moved on to white Russians. So we both looked at each other and we're like, oh my God.
That's the bad guy. That's going to be Ares. And it's going to be a bait and switch. And
someone calling for peace is definitely the bad guy
Prime,
in this movie.
Prime Minister Nigel Mate turns out to be the way more evil than the
and like,
the
warmongers. And as you mentioned, like, his character is first introduced by giving like an impassioned speech, like, every minute that we delay, thousands of lives are being lost in the trenches for no reason. Please bring this madness to an
end.
We
have to do something. They literally said that.
She
says that we have to do something.
He says it. Chris Pine goes, dad taught me you can either do nothing or do something. It's like,
but some variation of that line gets repeated by four different characters. Because
that's the point of the movie, is we'll crystallize in just a little bit more. The point of the movie is you always have to do something, even if it means
otherwise
waging a
you're
war.
An Assadist.
Okay, the politics of this movie, like, by the way, Lebanon was 100% right to boycott this movie because it is 100% pro-intervention, Western intervention in the Middle East.
But it wasn't, they actually they didn't ban it because of the horrible pro-intervention Zionist message or because Gal Gadot was in the IDF when Israel killed thousands of innocent Lebanese. It was actually just because Hassan Nasrallah, the general secretary of Hezbollah, is also a film buff.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's not good, folks.
It's
two cups of tea out of a possible 10.
So, like, then, you know, after they have to defeat the appeasocrats in the British Parliament to do a secret behind enemy lines mission to, like, go to the front in Belgium or whatever and defeat, you know, the evil Kaiser's chemist before he has a chance to use his doomsday device.
She's the chemist.
Women are bad too.
Yeah, that's the thing, is they wanted to give you an evil woman, too.
But also good. Yeah. They're also good. And they're good and bad. They're complicated.
Yeah, very complicated, very sexy, very complicated.
Yeah, it's like me. I'm very dangerous. Keep away from me.
You're very dark, very brooding.
You could get staph infection from stepping on something on my floor. I'm dangerous. I'm bad news. Run away from me. You don't want to get MRSA from standing in my apartment for 3 minutes.
They assemble also like a ragtag multiracial coalition of secret agents to go behind enemy lines.
Oh, God, all the races
are there, Scottish, Irish, all the oppressed races.
No. We have to talk about that. There's this one Arab guy, and at one point he gets a brief aside to develop his character slightly. His only other character trait is that he's horny.
Yeah.
He's a high sweetie guy.
Yeah, he's a high sweetie guy. He said, me? I don't want to be at war. I am an actor, but I am the wrong color. And it was like this weird breaking of the fourth wall where he's like, and just so you know, it's actually the filmmakers of this movie who are the real heroes fighting racism.
Off wistfully with this kind of moment where you're supposed to internalize that and be like, but he is on screen.
Hollywood is so up its own ass. Yeah. I can't believe they wrote that in.
That was really
There will never be a non-white stormtrooper. I don't know what that is.
There's a Scottish sniper guy who has PTSD.
Yeah. And there's this funny moment where, because they keep building up how he has PTSD. Like, at first he's comic relief because he's drunk and Scottish. But then it gets, like, very harrowing. And then there's this moment where they liberate a village or whatever. And they think maybe they'll go home. But then they all go, well, come on, we got to finish the mission. And he says, like, oh, maybe you could do better without me.
Yeah, and beforehand he was in a situation where he was, like, literally shaking so hard he couldn't take a shot.
It's actually a fairly decent representation of a shell-shocked dude. And he's like, oh, maybe you can get along without me. And Gal Gadot goes, no, we can't. You're coming with. It's like, isn't he scarred and has PTSD? You're making him go along for the rest of the
harrowing
mission?
To the point
where
he literally can't do his job. So even if you are an inhuman monster who doesn't care about his well-being, he's clearly not going to be useful to you.
No, that's ableism. Anyone with the tremors with DT should be the sniper.
Yeah. Think about, it's instructive to think about where Wonder Woman came from. Like, they don't, in the total not Israel island that she grew up on, they do Krav Maga, which is, as we've seen, just beating up children. That's how she learns how to fight. You persist and believe in yourself. So any time that you think you're going to wake up and freak out and stab your wife in the face because you think she's a crowd or something, you just have to believe in yourself through that.
Yeah. And then, like, the scene where there's an action scene, like, where she goes over the top in the trenches, and they're like, no, like, these men have been here for years. They haven't taken a single inch of ground. And she's like, it's implied, like, no man's land, conquer it. Right. And, like, this is the point in the movie where, like, its setting in World War I became actually nauseating for me to, like, I don't know why, like, because comic book movies have done this with World Captain America did this with World War II. Somehow I didn't find it as grotesque, but just to, like, mine the unspeakable human tragedy of World War I, which was, again, totally pointless for this idiotic action scene where a woman wearing, like, a bikini and a shield, like, goes over the top and, like, takes withering machine gun fire from, like, a nest of Jerry's, and then, like, she's taking the fire, boys, over the top, lads. Yeah. We're gonna, you know.
Yeah, because her bracelets deflect bullets. Good thing they never shot at her completely exposed thighs, where there's a fucking major artery that where you bleed from in, like, 3 minutes and die.
Which most people died of in World War I, like that. But I think it's so, I know why I think it's so disgusting. It's like,
World War One was the war that showed everyone, dispelled everyone's romantic notions of war, and it was for a dumb reason. It was gas maimed the aristocracy en masse, and tons of people, they didn't just die in horrible ways, they just came back mutilated in ways we hadn't seen before.
Yeah, someone from Downton Abbey had sight loss, right, so yeah, like right. That's where like, oh, but, maybe war is bad.
But it's so like disgusting in this movie because World War One, I think, informed a lot of anti-interventionist and anti-war thought in the West. But to take this war that did give people a correct view of what this is and insert this superhero in it and be like, oh, the problem was people just didn't believe in themselves enough in this totally pointless
the problem
colonial...
was there weren't enough women.
Right. This total pointless mass death event for just colonial possessions that millions and millions of poor people died for, and to just insert this self-help lean-in shit into it. Yeah. And to make it heroic is so disgusting.
There's a really funny scene where, like, they liberate this village, and they're like, thank you, Wonder Woman. And there's, like, a sniper in the bell tower of the church. Yeah. And, like, they're like, she's like, give me a boost, boys. And she, like, vaults off, like, a fucking door or
they
something.
They amplify her.
And, like, they amplify her, and she, like, vaults off a door and, like, just punches this bell tower, and it just explodes all at once. Yeah. And, like, I turned to Virgil in that movie and, like, just imagining the townsfolk being like, that was our only church.
Why did you do that?
In France. No. Yeah. There'll be no religion this year.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the scene where she's running across the no man's land, getting, you know, shot at by the Mayo boys, that was the scene that...
The dry dicks.
That's the scene that... all the women were like, yeah, I cried at how beautiful.
Oh, I thought it was the end. I don't know. I don't associate with women with such bad taste.
A lot of people, I kept seeing it. A lot of people were like, yeah, I cried.
That part?
I believe it was that part, yeah.
Why?
Right? Because
that's
it's
not
like,
even supposed to be moving.
God. Cecil Rhodes was Matt McGrory.
Oh, God. So, like, what else happens? Like, so, they go to the front, they yeah. save these townspeople, right. And then, like, the evil Danny Houston, this is where, like, the film's noxious politics of the present day comes into point. Mm-hmm. They go to a castle, and Danny Houston, to, like, demonstrate the power of his new super gas, does a nerve gas attack on the village that they freed.
Right.
So, and then, draw your own conclusions, folks.
She runs, she curses the her American and British and Tunisian partner for holding her back and not letting her just kill Ares.
Assad. Sorry.
And she bolts into the village, and it's just a mist of orange gas, and it's harrowing, and if only someone had done something.
Then, I mean, like, who cares? But like, basically the climax of the movie is that the Germans are preparing to drop poison gas over right. London and end the war or whatever at this big airfield, and then she fights Danny Houston and kills him, and she's like, I don't get it. I thought the war was supposed to end. Like, you, the audience, are led to believe that he was the heavy of this movie at the end of it.
And then she turns around.
Then she turns around, and who's standing behind her?
Hello.
Hello, hello. It's David Thewlis, yeah. the appeasing, House of Lords member we saw earlier.
Yeah, by the way, I have to say, I'm currently watching the latest season of Fargo, mm-hmm. where David Thewlis is the scariest motherfucker on earth.
Yeah.
I love David Thewlis.
He's great.
And I was just like, whatever. I'm glad he's getting work.
Get your paycheck, bitch.
Yeah.
I would also like to give a plug for his breakout role, which is Mike Lee's Naked.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of my favorite movies of all time.
He was in Lebowski. What was he?
He was the guy with the cleft asshole.
Yeah.
Knox Harris, the video artist.
Bingo.
Yeah. I'm a friend of Morty's.
Yeah. and he laughs like that in the movie. But
like, keep this in mind about David Thewlis. If you've seen the new season of Fargo, if you've seen The Big Lebowski, if you've seen Naked,
great.
He is one of the sickliest looking individuals.
Yeah, he
alive.
Looks like someone named David Thewlis.
Like he's
it's
very
gross.
Like weedy. He's very tall and weedy, and just looks very gaunt and just sick.
Like his
all the
blood
time.
Is probably slightly mucosinal.
Okay, well here's the thing. Like the climax of the movie is that it turns out that David Thewlis's character is Ares, the god of war, and he's like, I've been there the whole time. I've been playing both sides. I don't know why he was the guy who wanted to make peace in the first place, or...
Because peace actually makes you vulnerable and extends the war.
Okay.
Because he knew that the German guy would not respect the peace and then send all the gas over.
Okay, got it.
But then, we're missing a part where before it's revealed it's him, she talks to Chris Pine, and she's like, I thought I killed Ares. And then he's like, maybe it's not Ares. Maybe it's the evil of men and all this other shit. And they're talking this philosophy 101 shit. And
yeah,
I just
that's what
behind,
I was saying. I was like, people are getting bombed. Like, I literally turned to Brendan and loudly and drunkenly said, people are getting bombed while they're having, like, an argument about moralities, you know, that's you usually have in, like, a freshman philosophy class. And, like, things are sailing over their heads.
The climax of this movie, like all the DC movies that we've seen so far, involves a ludicrous and horrible CGI slugfest between Gal Gadot and David Thewlis. Like I said, the sickliest, like, weediest looking man who, like, becomes a CGI-enhanced titan.
Yeah.
They have, they're, like, throwing tanks
it's
at each other and shooting lasers out of their
lasers.
Eyes.
Lasers. So much fucking lasers. All these movies are just 30 minutes of lasers for the last
exactly
bit.
Like Batman versus Superman. Yeah. It was exactly like the climax of that movie where it's just this gigantic Hulk fights like CGI individuals that look human.
Yep.
That's
you're
it.
You're just watching a cartoon.
But there's it just sucks. Lasers. Yeah.
It
just
sucks.
So
and then they
lasers.
Keep cutting back to Chris Pine and his guys doing the final mission. Whatever. Like he's supposed to steal the plane and blow up all the chemicals in the sky.
He kills himself.
And he does a suicide mission. So he sacrifices himself. And that actually, not any broader principle or even the Tumblr shit, the memory of him killing himself so that humanity may live or whatever is what Gal Gadot realizes as the reason to save humanity and then defeat Ares.
Okay, just quick note. Could he not have just landed the plane?
I didn't really understand.
No, there apparently was a timer. So it was like a locked in. It was. I mean, you can't disable a timer, obviously.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's right.
You know, you can't stop the clock. It was going to go off one way or another.
If they made the Wonder Woman that I want, he would not have shot the plane in midair. He would have made the best use of it. He would have flown it into Westminster.
So the movie ends, and, you know, she's, like, back in the present, and she's like, my joke at the end of the movie is she says some line where she's like, I used to think that you could save the world, but now I'm only trying to save one very specific state in that world that is worth fighting for against all of the bad guys that surrounds it. But, so yeah, that was the end of Wonder. Was there anything else that we forgot?
Financed by the BBC. Thank you. Please remember.
Written by three dudes.
Yes.
It was an
Josh
insane kind of narrative for a movie to come out now. Part of me wondered when I was watching him, like, was this originally written during the Bush years?
Yeah.
And they just decided to just not change anything.
Well, that's a good segue to the ideological compatibility.
I actually did, in looking up the reviews for this movie, I realized that we read a snatch of the Free Beacons review of this movie when Alex was our guest a couple weeks ago. And remember,
Will, did you learn nothing from Wonder Woman? It's called a vulva.
Zing!
I just got that.
Yeah, there we go.
I'll ask after the recording.
So Sonny Bunch reviewed Wonder Woman, and folks, he loved it. You might remember Sonny Bunch as the sort of, I don't know,
Sonny Bunches of Oaf.
Yeah, the sort of jolly, sort of
peach-like.
Yeah, peach-like lad who gets paid, I think, six figures to write shit like this for the Free Beacon.
The drinking bird that they have in the office. Right.
How Hannah Montana is against teachers' unions.
Or like he says
Mario Brothers?
The DCU strikes back with the best comic book movie in years. Imagine liking this movie or pretending to like it for a job. I just want to read a couple paragraphs here. He says, much has been made out of the humor in Wonder Woman, and for good reason.
What?
It's genuinely funny.
No, what?
What? What? What? All the humor in there is like when Chris Pine will be like, when people have sex, and Wonder Woman will be like, what is a vagina?
No, the humor is like when Gal Gadot sees him naked, and she's like, are you an average male? And he goes, above average. And you're like, ha, I'm thinking of a penis.
No, he means the humor is the concept that a woman could be competent.
He says,
like, look at her. She speaks more than one language.
No, he says,
it's hilarious.
It's genuinely funny. One part fish out of water comedy. First when Trevor tries to understand where he's washed up. And then again as Diana tries to understand the world of man from which she and the Amazonians have long hidden. And one part meet cute rom-com.
But shut up!
But that is not at all what that movie was.
Virgil, you do Matt right now.
Yeah.
You scream.
Fucking idiot!
But Wonder Woman surpasses its shallow Marvel Cinematic Universe brethren by synthesizing those laughs with the philosophical concerns underpinning Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman. Queries about the nature of man in a world of gods that render the DC Cinematic Universe so much more interesting than its competitor at Marvel. I'm just imagining like the Warner Brothers just like handing him a sack with just a dollar sign written on it so he can like debase himself like this.
Because say what you want about the Marvel movies, they're big, they're dumb. I haven't seen any of them, but they're cartoonish, forgettable, and everyone fights and then they go home. These ones are interminable gray slogs that confuse like length with depth and metaphor, and
it's about
make
girth,
you want to kill
okay.
yourself. Yeah.
And like before anyone's like, you know, we've shit on these movies before, but like it's not because they're like popcorn summer blockbusters. It's because they're awful. Yeah. They're not fun at all. There's not a single satisfying moment. No. I'll cop to this right
also,
now.
Also, they don't have a sense of humor about
it. I loved Logan and I loved Star Wars Rogue One. Okay. Check and
mate
haters.
It was pretty good.
I enjoyed Logan a lot.
I thought Logan was a little too I think comic book movies need to acknowledge that they come from comic books. Get back to comic books.
Two more hits from Sonny here. But it's Godot's film, and the strikingly beautiful Israeli actress, who has never been asked to carry a big budget picture like this, shows a surprisingly.
Yeah, have her play Anna Karenina. There is no why in love.
She's gonna be Lady Macbeth. Yeah. It's like, the darling perfumes of Arabia will not wash this little hand.
Count Vronsky, you have to let me go. I have to. We have to build new Iron Dome for bigger rock that Palestinian invent.
Sorry, go on. She's very bad.
She shows a surprisingly deft touch.
Yeah.
Her Diana is
deaf?
Both...
Yes, I agree.
Her Diana is both feminine...
Okay.
And then his example...
Yeah, we don't want any of those dykey bitches.
His example of Diana being feminine is that she goes, ooh, a baby, when she coos for the first time on the streets of London. So she has a maternal instinct.
Mm. She's literally never seen a baby.
And headstrong, though her ferocity is appropriately leavened by an almost adolescent petulance at the beginning of her adventure. She's desperate to join the fray and fulfill her destiny, and Diana's naivete is betrayed by the tremulous, almost whiny tone her voice occasionally adopts in the early going.
That's a weird touch.
Okay, this is the last thing. This is the asterisk at the bottom of his review that's like sort of an addendum that's tagged on. That's all in italics. And he just says, it's good to see Wonder Woman, a movie that plays harsh interrogation techniques for laugh, highlights the need for the strong to intervene on behalf of the weak and impressed, and treats as villains quislings who sue for peace that will only bring more destruction.
Oh, you mean like when someone sells a war that kills a million fucking people for no reason to just enrich a small group of people, and like a quisling shaped like a drinking bird reviews movies backing up their ideology? You mean like that, you fucking piece of shit?
He says, rack up positive notices from the almost uniformly liberal critical core. The Bernie bros warned us that you could slap an identity politics veneer on just about any neoconservative policy and progressives would lap it up. And they were right. Liberal interventionism is back, baby.
Well, we agree on that. It's like, you can slap identity on right-wing shit. All these, the amount of people that are watching this, and look, I have a high tolerance for propaganda. I can watch Law and Order and be like, yay, police, for like 30 minutes or however long the fucking episode is. And I know the police are bastards. I can watch lots of war movies and be like, get them, kill the bad guys. And I know it's not that.
I can play but Diva this movie, with her police skin.
This movie was so heavy-handed. It was such bald propaganda that its entertainment value didn't even allow me to turn off that part of my brain for the duration of the film.
Yeah, I don't get how people were so entranced by this, because what they're selling is... the type of liberal interventionism that has just lit the world ablaze for decades and decades. And the way they're selling it to you is by fucking adorkable dialogue and laser battles that are in every one of these fucking... How do you see that? And you're like, yeah, I guess we should go into Syria.
You would have to have the weakest mind.
Sonny didn't need this movie to want to go into Syria. I mean, not him personally.
No, I mean, I mean the people he's referring to.
But he's right about how you can slap that identity veneer on anything, and people will just lap it up and not be like, wow, that was gross. That was an attempt to emotionally manipulate me.
It's a very Straussian review.
Yeah.
There should have been a scene in the movie where she uses
He just thinks it's good.
I don't want to give Sonny Lunch too much credit because I don't think he actually has any deep-rooted political values other than DC Comics are superior to Marvel Comics.
No, but that one line did tap into something accurate.
He's correct.
Extremely accurate.
Yeah.
Well done.
He's just like...
Runny Bunch. Runny Lunch.
By the way, look up a photo of him as well.
Yeah,
I might have to play a clip of when he reviewed for the Washington Times movies because he literally, if only you could see him, he really does look like a peach. Like his perfectly round head, fuzzy, and he just goes like, OMG, here I am again for the Washington Times, courtesy of Reverend Moon, reviewing Hannah Montana. And it's just like 5 minutes, you'll never get back, but
well,
I might give to you.
There's only one good film critic left, and it's Sani Kenyon, the guy you see in the back of New York City cabs, because he likes every movie.
Nick's favorite guy.
He's so great, he just loves every movie.
Go
see it.
Wait, is Armand White still kicking?
Yeah, okay.
I'll put him up.
He writes for the National Review now.
Right.
No shit.
I like reading.
Please keep in my note about Sandy Kenyon because I want him on the show someday.
Well, this one was a little less to unpack because with Batman vs. Superman, we had our very elaborate Turkish geopolitical theory. Yeah. And Suicide Squad, another
divorce.
Political theory, but also divorce. This one told you what it was about. It was about going to war as soon as possible for the sake of feminism, I guess.
Yeah. Again, and I don't want to give Sonny Lunch any credit, but if you all insist, Sonny Lunch, if you're listening to this, please come visit the Chapo offices between the hours of 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. on weekdays for your complimentary Chapo board game. You've won.
You won. Now, to close out the show, I think Virgil, you have a
something. So this movie is just as garbage as it is. It's a missed opportunity because there's just a fascinating publication history of Wonder Woman that Blair told me about last week. Wonder Woman is the creation of this guy William Moulton Marston, who is a psychologist. He's the inventor of the polygraph machine, the lie detector test.
Again, one of the least accurate pieces of machinery ever.
Yeah. Well, this is first half of the 20th century clinical psychology.
Calculators,
it's all bullshit.
Count to 6 million.
And I'm reading from a couple of Wikipedia pages here. Marston posited that there's a masculine notion of freedom that is inherently anarchic and violent, and an opposing feminine notion based on love allure that leads to an ideal state of submission to loving authority. Marston was found by a guy who works at DC Comics because Marston had written an article saying comics can be used to express these concepts. And so they gave Marston the opportunity to create an ideal superhero that would express his ideas that women are actually strong and that we should respect the power of submission and all that bullshit. And it was also incredibly erotic because Marston was polyamorous and... He, for several years, lived with along with his wife, dated a young woman who started out as his research assistant and lived with them in this trio, this poly trio. And Wonder Woman is loosely based on the girlfriend in that trio. Hang on a sec. I have to find this.
Wonder Woman is literally your wife's girlfriend. Just
yes. Yeah. Marston wrote, "Not even girls want to be girls so long as our feminine archetype lacks force, strength, and power. Not wanting to be girls, they don't want to be tender, submissive, peace-loving, as good women are. Women's strong qualities have become despised because of their weakness. The obvious remedy is to create a feminine character with all the strength of Superman, plus all the allure of a good and beautiful woman." And in addition to that, Marston intentionally inserted certain bondage aspects to the character. According to Wikipedia, William Marston's philosophy of diametric opposites has bled into his design of the mythology. This theme of diametrics took the form of an emphasis on certain masculine and feminine configurations, as well as dominance and submission. The cuffs, the whip,
that forces you to tell the truth.
Oh, yeah.
A quote from Marston about the sexual implications. The only hope for peace is to teach people who are full of pep and unbound force to enjoy being bound. Only when the control of self by others is more pleasant than the unbound assertion of self in human relationships can we hope for a stable, peaceful human society. Giving to others, being controlled by them, submitting to other people cannot possibly be enjoyable without a strong, erotic element. With that fascinating backstory, you can see how someone could have made a really fucking good Wonder Woman movie. Someone smart enough to coyly remark on the S&M undertones of the character.
I have an idea for a better Wonder Woman movie. So it is actually just Hillary, and she shows up in her invisible plane, but her sidekick, Jeffrey Epstein, is like, wait, anyone can see into that? No. We have to rethink this. It's the movie I make.
No, but this is a certain type of, like, male, and I would say feminist thought or whatever. I'm not even going to say feminist, but there is a sort of type of male feminist affect where it's like, well, actually, women are great, and the road to feminist liberation just so happens to be what turns my crank.
Women are great, and they're powerful, and they should control the world because they're submissive, and I'm really horny for that.
Yeah. That's and, literally, you know, it's like, all I want is for a woman to step on my balls, and it's because I'm a feminist.
And I'm so at Yeah, even at the root of it, it's not actually a feminist sentiment. I mean, I suppose you could argue that's somewhat progressive for the 1930s.
Yeah, I mean,
no, it's just a fetish.
Yeah,
he's just a pay pig.
Right, that's what they had. I mean, that's the type of thinking where you think like all women are just this weird charity you support, but also like a version of your mom that you wish was 30 feet tall and could, like, just fucking crush you. They wish their feet were so big that every time you open your mouth, you get a fucking every orifice filled with toe jam. And you're like, yeah, that's my political beliefs.
I'm just saying right now, Hollywood, you have the opportunity to rectify this. Call up John Cameron Mitchell. Call up John Waters.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
He's already written the screenplay. I guarantee you he's written it on
season. Can you imagine, though, like a John Waters, like, Wonder Woman, where he just acknowledged that
this is how excited we would be just to hear those words.
Some perv's fantasy.
Think how much John Waters could make of the lasso that makes you tell the truth.
Oh my God.
They didn't do anything with this fucking lasso. That's such a funny concept.
Yeah. They did a little with it, but you forgot it because it was so fucking boring.
Yeah.
So, yay or nay on Wonder Woman?
Yay, of course. Give your money to Wonder Woman.
Yeah, if you're the type of piece of shit that goes on Birthright, you know.
No, Felix, you had one more really good joke that was...
when they're in the boat together.
They're in the boat together, and Wonder Woman's like, there's enough room to sleep here with me. And Chris Pine's like, oh, but, you know, it's the 30s, and no one ever has sex before marriage. Everything before World War II is the 30s. I know it's the 1910, but I don't... Look, it's been a long day. Okay, I know it's 1918, but he goes, because it's the past, no one, you know, sleeps before marriage with each other. And Wonder Woman goes, but there's plenty of room right here with me. And I was like, that's just what Birthright
is.
Yeah.
Yep, that is Birthright.
Superhero Birthright. Oh, and then last thing of note about the movie theater experience, the other really funny thing. By the end of the movie, Virgil was just muttering, fuck you, fuck you. To me, I was like, both to me for making him see it and the screen, just sort of the filmmakers by osmosis. And then when we were leaving, we were all in the lobby, and Virgil comes up to Nick and his girlfriend. He goes, oh, wow, what movie were you at? Funny Fist running at you? And they were sitting next to him the entire movie.
He was too fidget spun.
and shout out to the people who recognized us on the street.
Oh, yeah, they were cool.
We had some people who shouted out Chapo.
They did the exact kind of fan interaction that I like, where they sort of went, I recognize you and appreciate your work. And we nodded, and that's ideal for me.
Not the kind I like, though, where they hide in the trash compactor unit of my apartment and surprise me.
So this episode is dedicated to
every mother,
our personal feminist hero, Margaret Sanger.
Lenny Riefenstahl.
Karen Handel.
Keep it up.
She persisted. On the night we saw Wonder Woman, she persisted.
She beat John Brosoff.
That laser battle at the end was her beating Osoff.
The woman that Wonder Woman is loosely based on is the daughter of the woman who opened the first abortion clinic with Margaret Sanger.
Whoa.
Ooh.
Hey. Sweet.
Balls in your court, Free Beacon.
Woo!
Next move, yours. All right. Till next time, guys.
Peace.
Bye. Bye.